Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're gonna go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Get that one. Oh, you hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Right here.
Size of that deer.
Thank you.
Oh boy, oh boy. Welcome back to another episode of Michigan Wild. I had a pretty eventful week, guys. I'm just going to dive right into it. I tried to fill another doe tag. I've been talking about late season, January, trying to do this extended archery season here in Kent County where I live. And try to take advantage of a micro food plot. And everything went according to plan. Did a hanging hunt on it wasn't the really cold days this past week, but it was like right after. I think it was like 16 degrees. The wind chill was down, 10 degrees or less. Cold sit, but did a hanging hunt in a tree I've been wanting to be in for the last couple of years. And everything went really well. Tons of deer. Had $6 work by me in single file line, kind of like a September hunt almost. And didn't see the deer I wanted to see, but does were in range. I've talked about this before, man. When a deer falls in sight when you're bow hunting and everything goes smoothly, I got to make sure I take that in and really appreciate that more often, especially with a doe. Anyways, was sitting there, long cold sit, was surrounded by deer, lack of cover. But spot that hasn't been pressured since December 20th. Haven't hunted this plot until, since then. So just kind of waited for everything to line up, work schedule and everything, and made sense to go out there on Friday night. And yeah, a group of does worked their way in. I mean, had many deer around me and decided to take a shot at a doe at 28 yards. It was so cool. All these deer were just digging through the snow, kicking snow up, making little craters all over, and they're eating into this carbon low plot. And yeah, I had a window. The one thing I should have done a little better was I did bring a saw to cut some lanes some shooting spots, because this tree I was in, I knew there was lots of branches. The reason why I hunted it before, because didn't really feel like ever cutting those branches, but I was like, Friday, it makes sense. It's going to be windy. I'm going to do it. And got to the point where I was all set up and there was a couple more branches I should have probably cut. But I can see deer off in the distance. And where I'm sitting, I'm in ag country, I can see a long ways, and decided to take the approach of, hey, this is going to have to work. Because what I noticed from last time I hunted there, they can cover a long ways really quick if they want to get somewhere. They'll run right across these open fields to get to, maybe the other block of woods or the other little train feature or waterway, whatever they're trying to get through. So it can happen quick, especially late season. So I decided to leave it where it was. Anyways, 28-yard shot and, quartering to me, a shot I've taken and, executed quite a few times. I mean, I have $2 now that I've shot in the same similar shot, quite a few handful of does. I really like this shot. They're quartering to you. You can put the arrow, right in front of the leg bone, essentially. Go through the soft part where the neck and the shoulder meet, especially up in the air kind of high. And, usually your exit's really close to the armpit or side. Executed my shot, zipped right through her, thought it was great. Waited, got Henry and Ashley, a little over an hour later, we started tracking and, got snow. So, it was just like, this is great. There's blood spray everywhere. Everything was looking really good. Blood on the trees. Turned into a half mile, then turned into 3/4 mile, then turned into a mile. Like, this deer has not stopped running. What is going on? And, nonstop running. You can see the running in the snow. Breaking branches and all sorts of stuff. And just like, man, you got to find her where she bedded. Kept saying, Henry's got to find where she stopped. Well, she finally stopped, it was 1.1 miles into the track, over 2 hours later, so 3 hours after shot, and found the bed. And then at that point, I was like, okay, I'm done until tomorrow. And that was a couple of reasons why that was. It was late. Little man was beat. He'd just been fouling around in the snow for, over 2 hours, trudged along. And the deer had gone onto a neighboring property that I had permission years ago, but I had not had current permission. So I'm always a guy that, especially when it comes to, going on someone else's property, that I'm always play it safe with permission. So I waited till the following day. It took a long time to get permission. Ended up getting permission like 5:30 the following night, which I wasn't too worried about because it was really cold. And Tony was able to come out with his dog Fred, and man, dude, we struggled at first because this deer crossed a field after it bedded, and the drifts and stuff were pretty bad. But Long story short, Fred ended up finding where the deer cut across the field into this, you know, thicket, pretty thick area. And we found, you know, two or three other spots where she had bedded that previous night. And well, I mean, in the snow, it looks like a lot of blood, but it really wasn't that much blood. And then we searched the surrounding area and could not, you know, could not round her up essentially. And, you know, I play the shot over and over in my head. I'm just trying to be transparent here. Like, I mean, I've shot a lot of deer with my bow, and I've been fortunate enough to, you know, shoot deer, and I find a lot of them, but there's also some that don't quite get found, and I've, you know, have made mistakes and all that stuff. So one thing I can think of is that this shot, it was a little bit windy, but, I mean, I'm shooting into an open area. The deer did react to my shot, but I didn't. My reaction was a little high on entry. So I think I just didn't aim low enough, and that's kind of always been my Achilles heel. I never miss low. I always miss high, especially on shots like that. I think I just got to, you know, continue to work on my pre-shot process of like, hey, aim low, aim low, aim low. And I felt like I did aim low, and I think it's kind of difficult to always judge what a deer does. It's a wild animal, you know. Everyone always says that. It happens, and it's I haven't quite figured it out yet. Like, there's times where deer – you think deer are going to go, you know, crazy and do something. They stand there like a statue. And then there's other times they come unglued. And there's other times you're like, I don't even know what I could have done different in that circumstance. And that's kind of how I felt after this doe. I felt like I executed my shot great. And I thought the deer was going to be dead and did not find it. So just full transparency, tried to punch a tag here in January in this urban archery hunt extended season. And yeah, I failed. I did not recover that deer. Unsure how that deer's alive. The only thing that I can kind of come up with is she ducked and I hit her too high and didn't really get anything substantial. I mean, in the snow, you know, I didn't track her until, you know, over an hour later, and, you know, I think it was 11 degrees when we were tracking. So, I mean, everything was frozen. I mean, the blood that we were tracking was, like, down into the snow. But, I mean, nothing that I thought wasn't going to keep me from getting some fresh brack straps. So that was kind of my week in the deer thing. You know, everything worked great. I got a shot opportunity off, all that stuff, but just didn't quite fully execute. So, yeah, that was kind of a downer. You know, that happened Friday. But, you know, I'm feeling a little better today. We did chase some rabbits, which was always fun. Got to get the dogs out and touch on the conditions a little bit. Like, cold this morning, real cold and windy. And the dogs jumped. I think they jumped four, and I think we got three of the four. The one got into hole, we're pretty certain, at the end of the hunt. So they did a good job. Like, they were finding them, they were getting them up, but then they were just struggling to kind of, you know, keep moving the track. But that didn't keep the rabbits from circling perfect. Like, we just played the long game. Once they jumped a rabbit, we kind of all just stopped and just waited to see what happened. And yeah, sure enough, three rabbits circled perfect. The fourth one did too. It just didn't end up dying. So that was kind of fun. Like, dude, it's crazy. We've hunted, you know, this is our third or fourth time. I think the fourth time we've taken the dogs out. And we've had, like, crazy different circumstances each time, and it's been fun. So dogs did good, all that stuff. And then, you know, so that was good. And then also got to go to the Traditional Bow Hunters Expo in Kalamazoo with my dad. So I've done a couple things since the deer happened, and, you know, I feel like these things kind of help ease my mind a little bit. Still a struggle, kind of, like, mentally, like, gosh, I have a few days left. I kind of, there's part of me, it's like, hey, just hang it up for the year. And the other part of me is like, hey, you got tags. Go out there and try to, you know, redeem yourself, essentially. So we'll see what happens between now and the 31st. But, yeah, the Traditional Bow Hunters Expo is awesome. I've talked about it a little bit. I'm definitely in the hunt for a different, you know, recurve to use. Mine is just, like I've talked about before, just a little too much bow for me at this time with how my shoulder feels. And that was pretty apparent, you know, shooting multiple different bows at the expo. So if anyone is intrigued with traditional archery or maybe trying to do that, dude, the expo was sweet. Able to see a lot of things that I don't know anything about. But the cool thing was, like, talk about things I don't know any about. Like, there's a lot of like equipment or manufacturers or companies in the space that I just don't have much familiarity with. So seeing them and seeing all the people that were at the booths and talking to a lot of good guys and just seeing the type of people that were there at the show, it was a lot of fun. And you're able to go up to a booth and shoot a bow. Like, they're like, yeah, here's some arrows. If you don't have any arrows, take this bow. And they had an archery spot or a range set up where you could shoot these bows. And so I was able to shoot, I think I shot 5 or 6 different bows in a set. I mean, essentially back to back. Me and my dad were each grabbing a bow. We kind of take turns shooting and kind of swap back and forth between the bow. And I could tell there was, after just shooting a couple of the higher poundage bows I shot, because my dad was shooting a little higher poundage bow, that same issue that happens with my bow is I could tell instantly. I've been shooting my compound in the basement. I've been, trying my best to keep my shoulders strong all throughout this, because, like, I don't want surgery. So I've been doing that. And even just something about the way I shoot a traditional bow, or how the weight stacks up, man, whoo, screaming. But that sweet spot right about 40 pounds, I have like a pretty long draw length. So, I mean, by the time I think I hit my anchor, I'm, closer to 45 or 47 pounds. That seems to be kind of the sweet spot for me. So that's kind of what I'm going to hunt for. Obviously, I shot some really cool custom bows. So I'm trying to scheme and figure out a way to get my hands on one of those, because it was really fun shooting those. And I kind of fell in love with a couple of them. So we'll see what the future holds in that, if I'll end up, pulling the trigger on something like that. But overall, man, if you guys are into the traditional archery wannabe, go to an expo, go see that. It's a lot of fun to see everyone else and all the cool things that space has to offer. So that was good doing that. Like I said, I got the rabbit hunt, all that stuff. So overall, I mean, I would love to have punched that other tag officially and, found that deer and did everything, but it didn't happen, which is okay. I mean, I'm moving on. I'll be fine, but maybe I'll just have to go redeem myself. We'll see what happens. Hey, obviously, Vitalize Seeds carbon load plot. Once again, everything worked great with that small micro plot. I just didn't, quite seal the deal. And then, want to give some love to Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, Matt Deemer here in this intro. He, like I say, every week, I mean, I love working with him and I love the relationship we have. And anyone else who is looking for a taxidermist, make sure you give them guys a follow, or go check it out. Go swing in, give them a phone call, talk to them, and make one of those memories, go show up on your wall, something you can have for a long time. And, I don't have any regrets of seeing that skull cap. So they're like, oh man, it'd be really cool if I had a European mounted it, or, done a cool shoulder mount on that or something like that. It'd be your first buck, be, first anything, or just another memory you just want to have on that wall. So give Wildlife Legends Taxidermy a shot. And then also want to announce a new partner. I am partnering with DH3, so Kevin Vissison. He is over at the Deer Hunter Podcast. He came out with this synthetic scrape system. I think this might be going into year 3. I know I've used this stuff for sure for the past 2 years. And do the scrape system, it's a synthetic scrape system. And I've had nothing but great, great success with it. And, really enjoy that product. I've had him on the podcast before. It's good stuff. I've been a guy that loves hunting off mock scrapes for years. Even before I really knew what a mock scrape was, I always was intrigued with scrapes. Every time I saw a deer work a scrape, I was super intrigued. I loved bow hunting close to them as a, younger guy. I shot my first really big, my first 3.5-year-old, buck in Michigan, hunting off of a scrape, all that stuff. So I love having that ability to, hang a vine, find a location, set a camera on that, make a mock scrape, and kind of just learn all the details I can learn about a deer I'm maybe hunting or an area I'm trying to hunt. So really looking forward to this partnership. I'm pretty excited about that. DH3 is a it's a sweet product, right? It's a small, it's American made. Kevin's doing everything, off of a side gig, essentially. He's got his full-time job and he's doing this and he's creating a product that he feels like is helping, helping hunters, and is, I think for what you get, it is, I mean, I've used quite a, I haven't used every scent that there is out there, but I've tried a lot of different things, and the product I was using before I liked, but there was a lot of things I didn't like about it, and there was like differing levels of success with that product. But I do know this synthetic scrape system, the DH3 he has, I have seen consistent success with them. Now, not every scrape is in the right location, not every scrape is created equal, but using the branch catalyst and then the stuff you put in the dirt, I mean, it works. And I love getting those pictures. I mean, all my nice deer that I've chased over the last couple of years, you know, I got solid intel on them working a mock scrape that was, you know, started with DH3. So that's a pretty exciting news. Another partner for the show. Like I said, look forward to talking more about that here in the future. And we will probably do a giveaway of that stuff. So keep your eyes out on social media for that, and also on here we'll talk about it some more. But yeah, this kind of getting to this week's guest, Jeremy Tilley. He hopped on with me. He's a guy that we've talked back and forth for quite a while, and he's got a young son, young family. He's got a couple kids, and his son's a little older than Henry, and we've kind of just defaulted to talking about how we take our kids hunting. And we've talked about it through social media and messaging each other back and forth, and I was like, dude, let's just do a podcast about it. And dude, it was great. Me and him just sat down and talked about, you know, all there is to be about being a dad, having your kids in this hunting with you, and what that's like. You know, small game hunting, deer hunting, waterfowl hunting. His son loves duck hunting, and yeah, it was this good overall conversation. Just talking about kind of weapons that were used, bows, and all that stuff. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was just a good BS session with a guy that I consider a friend. You know, over this time we've communicated. Looking forward to we almost crossed paths at the Traditional Bowhunter Expo. He's a traditional guy, loves hunting with his traditional equipment, so almost made it happen, just was busy and didn't see my phone, and we kept passing each other, and then I was like, oh, I was on a time constraint because my dad had to be home. But dude, looking forward to shooting bows with you sometime. And he knows he's gonna be a guy that I'm gonna reach out to and lean on a little bit for some info and some, you know, that traditional aspect. And dude, I'm just gonna back up a little bit more. The couple people I've met that shoot trad and are in traditional archery through the traveling 3D league that I was in, I mean, you guys know who you are. You've all been great to me. If you're listening to this, I mean, I've had a guy that let me borrow a bow to shoot. I've had another guy that's like, you know, anything I ask him, he can break things down really good. I mean, shout out to you guys. Really, that community of that is really cool. I mean, archery in general is a group of guys that just have the same purpose, right? They want to go enjoy the mystical flight of the arrow, right? Watch the arrow fly through the air and hit that spot, be that, you know, the recurve, be that with the you know, traditional bow or with a compound. And I love it. So don't be afraid to talk to anyone. I mean, that just starting a small conversation, who knows what that can lead to. But Jeremy, thank you for doing this podcast with me. It was a good time. I enjoyed sitting down with you and just talking like two guys would about family and all that stuff. Hopefully you guys enjoy that as well. Learn some things. If you find yourself maybe in the similar shoes as us with, you know, young kids, just get them out there. Enjoy the process. Enjoy taking them out there. You know, there's that fine line between pushing your kid too much, which I think we talk about a little bit here in this too. And you know, I kind of took that to heart, and it was kind of fun. Henry ended up going rabbit hole with us this week, and I always enjoy going with him, and he had a lot of fun, and I can't wait until he's toting a shotgun around doing the shooting, but seeing him enjoy the dog, seeing him go out there and just being outside rolling around acting like a crazy kid in the snow, it makes me happy, and it's a good time. So hey, that's it for this week's intro, guys. A little longer than I wanted, which typically is what happens, but just trying to keep everyone up to date on everything. Thank you for all the support. Thank you for the downloads. Thank you for everyone who bought a hat. I'm probably going to get an order of those in here in a little bit again. And if you haven't, you know, go check me out, Michigan Wild Pod on Instagram. You can reach out to me or, you know, follow me along on Facebook, Nate Roosevelt. I don't really post too much about the show on Facebook. It's mostly on Instagram. If you want to be on the show, if you want, you know, sit down and have a podcast, record what's going on, success story, anything like that, feel free to reach out to me. I had a couple guys in the works that's essentially how it happened. You know, just started communicating on, you know, social media, kind of talk about, see where we get a feel for each other. And then we try to come up with a game plan of when we can get it scheduled to do a podcast. So it's good stuff. But yeah, thanks for the support. And like I say, you know, every once in a while here, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and you have not, please leave a review or a ranking. That helps a lot. It helps grow the show, do things like, you know, get other partners and that kind of stuff. And like, I'm excited. I love the partners that I have. I'm excited to add DH3 to that and just continue to grow this and just do my best to help as many hunters as I can and outdoorsmen. And also, everyone be safe out there. I know it's winter time. We've had some crazy weather. Be that you're out ice fishing, be that if you're out enjoying, you know, snow on snowmobiles, or, you know, just doing your scouting, walking around, just be careful, be safe. No different than you are when you're climbing a tree all the time. Just take your time. I've seen a lot of things on social media, people get in accidents, and it's just like, I know, hey, we're all trying to enjoy this, you know, this winter season in here in Michigan, but still gotta be safe. Gotta come home with your family at night. So, hey, that's it. That's it, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for all the support. You know what to do this week. Make sure you get out there. All right, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I have guest for this week is Jeremy Tilley. Is it Tilley, right? Just like that?
It is, yep.
Tilley. Kind of think of that Bud Light commercial. All those years.
Yeah.
We were talking just a little bit before. You're kind of a Notre Dame fan, and they're playing the championship game right now. So I feel pretty honored that you're you know, doing a podcast instead of watching the game. So I appreciate that.
I'd probably get too mad if I were watching it right now.
Well, if we, you know, hopefully we get done in time, you can watch Notre Dame spank Ohio State, and I'll be all for that. Yeah. So,
I hope so.
Yeah. And you were saying, how close do you live to Notre Dame Stadium?
I'm only like direct line, you know, 30, 40 minutes. I could be at this football stadium.
Nice. Not bad. Yeah. So you're Southern Michigan. That's for sure.
Correct. Yep.
Nice. Well, let's kind of dive in. Yeah. Dive into, like, you know, who you are, what you do for a profession, that kind of stuff, and then we'll see where this takes us.
Yeah, Jeremy Tilley. I live in Southwest Michigan all my life. I am a high school auto shop teacher. You know, I worked in the trades for a while, and my wife's a teacher, and I somehow got sucked into teaching.
Yeah, she's like, oh, it's great. Come do this.
And... yeah, 15 years later, I'm still there.
Oh, nice. So do you have more hunting opportunities now that you're a teacher compared to being the trades, or is it about the same? Because summers are when you have, like,
yeah, summers is my time off. So hunting-wise, it's no big trips. I can't take a week off in November to go anywhere. I will say I get a lot more time during the week. Like, depending on my kid's schedule, I can get out and I can be home by 3 o'clock and in the woods by 3:30.
Nice.
You know, so I don't get any, you know, trips in, but I get more local hunts in, I would say.
Nice. And then are you a big fisherman then in the summertime?
Yeah. We usually take family camping / fishing trips. We'll go to the UP for a week, usually try to hit Lake Erie for a week, and Saginaw Bay for a week.
Oh, nice. That sounds like
fun.
Plus
the fishing around here. I mean, my home port is St. Joe, so we got some pretty good fishing here too.
Nice. Yeah, that would I can see how that's like a lot of fun now that we bought an old bass boat this summer and went fishing again, kind of like back into it. I never fished a lot with a boat growing up other than like an old John boat or something, the trolling motor. But getting a bass boat, kind of like easing into that. Me and the wife been talking like all winter, like, hey, we can't wait to, you know, get the boat back in the water. We're gonna try to do some more like adventure trips with it. Like, let's just go to some random spot in Michigan, tent camp out of the truck, and go fishing during the day, and then, you know, do those kind of like long weekends is kind of what we're looking forward to. And man, that's a lot of fun when you can take the family and do stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I think I've had all, except for my youngest, but she's only, like I say, 14 months. She hasn't been in a boat yet, but all my kids have been in a boat since they were probably 2 years old. Like all day trips, like some grown men wouldn't fish as long as they do.
Dude, I love it. Now, at what point in time? Because yeah, you have three kids, and your oldest, we're talking a little bit, is a little. My guy is going to be 9 in March, so similar age. Yeah. At what point in time are you like, hey, dude, you need to take these fish off yourself and put bait on your hook?
It's about time.
Yeah. That's what I told him too. I was like, you better freaking learn how to put those wax worms on, dude. I'm sick of doing that.
he can you know, like when we do panfish, he can handle those pretty much himself, but I won't let him get into the treble hooks when we're walleye fishing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, he's getting there. He's waiting on ice fishing, waiting on some ice. So
okay.
We'll see how that goes.
Nice. Does he have any like desire to target like a specific fish, like tip ups, or what kind of ice fish does he want?
No, we got some good panfish lakes.
Okay.
So, I mean, we'll throw some tip ups out and see what happens, but I'm not a big pike guy. I never have been. I like, they're fun. I just usually, if I ice fish, I'm after perch and gills.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. See, I never, I ice fished like two times. Oh, I can vividly remember ice fishing two times. One time I went with my uncle and a couple of his buddies, and or actually maybe one of his buddies. We had some older boys, and we did a bunch of tip-ups. And yeah. All I can remember is just like it was with us kids. I was youngest by probably like 3 or 4 years. I was probably like 11 years old, and it was a race to the tip-up if one got off. That was like one of the first times I got hit so hard I couldn't breathe for like an extended period of time because the dude laid me out so hard. And yeah. There was like 3 or 4 boys in that family, so they were quite the rowdy crowd. But I remember that day getting laid out real bad in the ice, and then I actually did get one pike. And I can't remember, for some reason, 23 inches is what kind of jumps off the head to me. I just remember it being that big, and I thought that was like – the most eeriest thing ever, you know, pulling that pike up through the ice. And so that was one time. And then my great grandpa took me with my uncle about the same time, probably that same age, either 10 to 12, somewhere in there. And we went and I never sent a shanty, never did that. I was always drill a bunch of holes, and they just were like, here, sit in this bucket and, you know, jig this thing. And I just remember looking over my uncle. He's just like wrecking all these fish right next to me. And I'm just like, this sucks. I'm just sitting here not catching anything. So I kind of gave up on the ice fishing thing. And then, you know, like rabbit hunting and small game hunting has always been my winter activity. But
yeah, that's how I grew up, rabbit hunting and stuff. I never ice fished as a kid. I didn't ice fish until I was probably 22, 23. And I got hard into it for a couple of years. Then when my kids were born, I was just like, okay, that's my time to just stop. You know, after a hunt, long hunt season of everything, it's like winter's just recovery time. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife would probably kill me if I ice fished as much as I used to.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up with the family thing, because that was, I didn't get back into the small game hunting like with beagles and rabbits until Henry was like 3 or 4 years old. 2019-ish. So yeah, he was about three and a half. That's when I got, because it was like a light bulb went off. I was like, dude, I can take him with me. And that was the thing. So I can see how ice fishing could be the same thing for guys. Like, hey, you can go have fun, take the family. Fishing is fishing to me is a lot like small game hunting, right? You can talk, you can be loud, you can get a bunch of snacks, and you can go for 2 hours, you can go for 45 minutes. It doesn't really matter. It's just all about just getting out there. So I really can see the, like, after the summer, like, okay, I should probably, you know, focus a little more attention on, you know, doing the fishing thing, especially, you know, coaching and, like, you know, you got coach in the spring, coach in the fall. So it's like, I got to do, like, you got a couple nights a week or taking up with that. What do you do on the weekends after a game? Or it's like, man, you can quick hop in the truck, hook the boat up, and you can go have fun for a few hours at night and make a little thing of it. And I really enjoyed that. I don't know if I'll get, I might go ice fishing here this winter with some buddies and try it and see if little man wants to go, but it's just real tough when I just am so used to hearing those dogs go off, you know. It's hard to give that up.
Yeah, like I say, he wants to ice fish. I don't know if I really want to anymore, but we got some couple lakes that are a couple minutes from the house, so I'm like, okay, dude, we'll go. But I'm afraid once I dig it all back out, it'd be like, hey, every day we're going.
Yep. Once you get that, once, especially if you hit it good, right? The first time you go out, you just hammer him. Yep. I'm sure he's going to be like, bet. I remember how when I was like, you know, 10 years old, I was just a pain in my dad's side. Let's go shoot guns. Let's go shoot clay pigeons. Yep. Let's go take me, honey. Let's do this, blah, blah. And I couldn't even hunt until I was 12, and I was still a little pain. So, that time's coming soon for my – Henry doesn't like rabbit hunting unless he can shoot something. Like, that's kind of like where he's at. He's like, I want to shoot stuff now, Dad. And it's like, well, you're almost there, you know, to hold a shotgun well and safely, but you're not quite there yet. So, yeah, a little monsters.
Oh, yeah, he'll get there because, you know, I've been hunting with my kid. Drake's been hunting since he was 5, turkey hunting. So, you know, I bought him 410 to turkey hunt with, and Then now this is his second full year of waterfowl season. He's got his own 20 gauge. He swings pretty good now. I can sit if I'm working around the house. I got a target range. I can give him out a box with 22 bullets. There you go, dude. Yep. Knock your lights out.
Yep.
Okay. He's not bothering me anymore. I'm like, hey, I don't have to babysit him. You know, I'm close. He's no good. So it's like he'll burn through shells.
Yep. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's what Henry's been doing. He's got his little single shot 22 that he shoots, and we got the little spinny metal targets and stuff he'll do.
Yep.
He handles that really well. It's the shotgun thing. So what kind of a shotgun do you use for him? Like what's, cause I was actually looking, I'm kind of looking for a gun. And what did I just see? It was CZ. It's a CZ over under 20 gauge, and it's a compact maybe is the model. And I actually held one of those today and I almost bought it for him, but I just don't know if that's the right approach. So yeah. What do you use for your little man?
Right now, well, he started with the single shot 410, a Rossi, which is still, what he chicken hunts with. That's a good gun. Then my brother's got a double barreled 410 that he started swinging. Then last year I got him, it's a Stoger semi-auto 20 gauge. It's the, 30-20. Because it's pretty light and it's got a compact stock on it. Then when he outgrows that, he can get to a bigger stock. But I thought about the 20 gauge double barrels, but I have a Ruger Red Label. The problem with the double barrels, it's two barrels. It's heavyweight. My kid's a scrawny little kid.
Yep.
So he struggles to weight it, but that semi-auto, because you don't have to pump it.
Mm-hmm.
So he can handle that. He's finally growing into his arm length where he can handle it fine now.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's exactly what I thought. I pulled up that gun, you know, just in the store.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, length of pull definitely makes sense. Cause I have like a little semi-automatic 410. Mm-hmm. That he can, you know, he can shoot, we turkey hunt with it, but we put it on a tripod for him to stand behind. But then when we went pheasant hunting, wasn't sure on the age if he could do it, and then end up, you know, he was old enough to do the non-resident pheasant hunt in South Dakota. But I had him practice with like all his layers on at home, and that 410 was just too much. Like he could get up, you know, but his like body was contorted kind of funny. And I was like, dude, you're not quite there yet. And then now that you're talking about this, what I should probably do is I should probably get another stock for that gun, chop it down, and then he could probably handle it better with the swinging around.
Yeah, because he has that same problem like when it's cold out and he puts all his layers on. He's even with his semi-auto, so then he'll get his 410 out and we'll take that.
Yeah,
you know, which is nice with those 410s and new loads that they have nowadays with the bismuth and the TSS, and like this thing can handle everything.
Dude, I cannot believe I took my wife's cousin. She's 12 years old, but not very big. Like she's little, you know, like one of those things like, ooh, like this might rock her a little bit. I did the whole like, hey, let's shoot this gun behind the house with seven shot regular, you know, 410 ammo. Had her shoot it a bunch. She handled it really good and then slipped in the TSI or TSS, whatever the crazy $5 a shot or whatever ammo went on her. And she wrecked this Jake at like 25 yards. I mean, just like steamrolled it, you know, and it kicked her pretty good. She's like, holy, what was that, you know? And it was funny, but I was really impressed with like how hard she hit that turkey at 25 yards with that.
Oh yeah, that stuff is lethal on turkeys, because I even hunt with a 410 now after seeing that stuff. I won't carry my 12 gauge or 20 gauge. That 410 is 3 pounds. I'm like, I'll carry that.
I will walk all over with that gun. Yes. So what,
my brother started duck hunting
stuff too, 410s?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, he shot it his first year, but mainly this year he stuck with his 20 gauge all year.
Okay.
So it's a more shot, better chances.
Yeah, I get the pattern. Pattern out there.
Yeah, that 410's tough. He didn't care. He was burning shells, so it didn't matter.
Now, you said your brother, you're talking about reloads 410s for you?
Yeah, we got into him and I both, when Drake got old enough, we got into that 410 kick, and he started reloading some of that TSS stuff, and we got, so we make our own shells for that, for turkey hunting. But, you know, I got that Boss ammunition is local to us, and that's where I get the waterfowl loads from.
Nice.
Actually, I went to my cousin. Went to school with the guy that started that company.
We've been friends. That's a good person to know right there.
I know. We've been friends for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Sweet. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to justify buying another gun slightly for myself and, you know, blame it on, hey, it's for the kid, you know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that was a good point you made. Cause I picked that over under up. And I'm like, just the weight, the front end of it just felt heavy for him. And, but yeah, so maybe I just gotta go, I'll go down the path of, I don't want to chop the stock on the 410 I have currently. Cause man, I love shooting rabbits with that semi-automatic.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt.
Oh, it's so, like you said, it's light, no recoil. You can really get on target quick and keep shooting. But yeah, maybe that's what I'll do, just kind of get that, because I know by next year, if I don't have something set up for him, he's gonna probably be pretty pissed at dad, like, come on dad, I want to do this. And my dad did pick up maybe it is Rossi, it's a not tactical, it's like a survivalist gun, so it's got like the stock. Maybe that is it a Rossi that makes one of those? I think it shoots
a
22 Rossi barrel and a 410 barrel on it.
Yeah,
maybe that's what we should look into. I forgot my dad told me he picked that up. I don't think Henry's seen it yet. That I should see how he can shoulder that, because that would give me like a really good idea, because those stocks are like really short on those too, and see how he shoulders that.
Because even like the turkey gun, the one we have, has a section of the stock you can take out to make it shorter.
Mm.
So that's even, you know, great for, because even my daughter, when she was like 6 years old, she was shooting it.
Okay.
You know, and she's got short arms, and she
I'm buying a single shot. Instead of buying a stock, I'm just gonna buy a whole other gun. I like adding guns to the inventory. So
yeah, well, those Rosties are super affordable too.
Yeah, like what are they like? I think you can get them used for like $200. I think I've seen.
Man, I swear when I bought mine new, it was, but that was right before COVID. But I think I seen the other day that you can get a new one for like $200.
Oh, perfect. I'm about to order one up.
Yeah, yeah, unless you might have to check on it now.
Is the is that with like a hammer on it, right? It's got steel shot hammer. Yeah, let's see.
It's got a hammer right and a safety on it too.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about
my brawler, that 410 pistol I have is the same setup. I really like that, because you can pull the hammer back, but it won't shoot unless you can't pull the hammer back unless you slide the safety.
Yep.
So I thought that was actually really interesting, because I grew up. So if the single shot full size guns are that way, it's awesome, because I learned on New England, right? A New England single shot 20 gauge is what I learned to shoot clay pigeons with and all that stuff. And it was a lot of fun to use, but man, that thing wrecked my shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let's see here. Okay, so does the one you got for your kids, does it have like a thumb hole stock or like the cutout stock?
Yeah, that's their turkey tough or Rossi tough turkey or something like that.
Yep.
It's green with black.
That would be the perfect rabbit gun for him.
Oh, yeah. That's got the longer barrel than some of the other ones that they make.
Okay. You know?
But it's still not really long. Super light.
I like this. And it's way cheaper than that over under I was looking at. Let me tell you
what. Oh, I bet.
See if I can find a price on this thing. Okay. I don't even know where to look for prices on this thing. Maybe I won't find it. Let's see. You got a pump shotgun too now, Rossi does. I didn't know that.
That's new. Last I looked at it. Yeah, because I thought about the pump, but that's so hard for them to, you know, like when we were we couldn't start hunting until we were 12. So by then I got a pump. My dad bought me a 12 gauge pump for my first one.
And we thought it was awesome, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, just like in the movies when you had the pump. I remember that same thing. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I have to go to a dealer, it looks like, but I'll definitely look into that. And I'll let in this intro, maybe I'll get a price on that. Cause that's, I noticed that, like, as you know, Henry's gotten older, he shot a couple deer, you know, he's done those things. He's slowly, like, he likes to go, but he wants to be like involved and differently than when he was just following along, you know, like bow hunting, like even bow hunting, he doesn't go with me as much bow hunting because he's not shooting something, you know? So like, cause he knows like, oh, on November 15th, I can, you know, I can shoot something with a gun. So he's like super amped for that. But then like, oh, he's got to tag along with dad. Not as cool. Don't get me wrong. Like there's still times he goes and he enjoys seeing it, but it used to be like the coolest thing ever was just to go with dad somewhere. Now he's like, well, I'd rather do whatever instead of just sit there and watch you shoot something. I want to experience that. So I'm kind of managing that a little bit as he's getting older.
Yeah.
And part of that's because he's had success at such a young age.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like us, we couldn't wait till we were 12 years old because we were just itching for it for years. And, you know, he hasn't really had to experience that. You know, this fall will be his third year that he's, you know, been able to, you know, target deer for himself.
Yeah, you know what I did, because Drake's the same way. When bow hunting, he wants to go with, but he wants to shoot, and with his, he shoots a longbow, and his recurve, he's nowhere near strong enough to pull the weight to shoot a deer with, or as accurate as he needs to be yet. I load him up full of judos, and then, like, you know, that's okay, when it's the prime time is done, I let him shoot at whatever squirrel comes by.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, and not at prime time. I said, hey, it's squirrel time. Then he gets ready.
Squirrel time. Yeah. He's pumped. So does he, you know, I kind of forgot that you did some trad hunting. Does he climb a tree with you? Are you guys ground assaulting, or what do you guys? Okay.
Yeah. We got just on our property, I got some, all my stands are either ladder stands, or they got the climbing, the one piece climbing stick. Yep. So it's easy for him to get up. You know, and they all got the safety line with his harness and everything. Mm-hmm. So I usually, he'll climb up in front of me, and I'll go right behind him. Yeah. And I got two stands set up or whatever, or I'll bring my lightweight hang on that I use on my mobile hunts and hang it right next to it. And, you know, so I only have to have one stand in a tree at a time.
Dude, I can't wait for the, Henry's been a couple times with me, same thing, got a spot really close to the house, and it's probably only like 12 or 13 feet up, and I never taken him the first time. He just sat on the platform with a blanket, because it was pretty cold, and we saw a ton of deer that night. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, he's itching to do that, and that's a good idea. And you know what? I can remember my dad let me do that same kind of a thing, you know, like, hey, we're hunting up north or whatever, and he'd come back from the morning hunt, and we'd like, hey, grab the 22s, let's go see if we can shoot some squirrels out back, or, you know, just doing things like that to keep you entertained. And that's something I should probably do a little bit, or be a little more aware of now that he's getting older, that you can do those little things. I mean, gosh, I remember one of those mornings we did something like that, and dad came back, and it might have actually been during like the first week of season, because it was pretty warm out. But we did one of those walkabouts to the 22, and we got a possum. Yep. I never shoot a possum, and I shot a squirrel, and that was like the coolest thing ever. And I was probably like 9 or 10 years old doing that. And I still remember that to this day. So yeah, that's a good point. And talking about archery and shooting bow, because we have the Kalamazoo Traditional Hunters Expo is coming up this weekend.
It's on my son's and I calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Are you guys pumped for that or what?
Oh, dude, yeah. I am. He is too, because since I think I got back into trad shooting, I want to say, right when I bought this house, so 6 years ago, I got back into trad, because I shot trad from high school all the way until I was like 22, 23. Then I had a shoulder surgery. I had to pick up a compound. I'm like, okay, I had good success for it, but I wanted to get back to trad, so I did. And we do the Compton shoot. We travel and do the Michigan Longbows Association shoot. Then this will be the first year I get to go to Kalamazoo. Nice. So I can't wait.
Nice. Yeah, me and my dad are going to go. I'll probably take Henry too. And maybe the wife. She might actually be interested. She always likes going to that stuff too. But my dad's like, he's probably going to buy a bow. Like he's been looking. He had a caribou, a custom caribou that was he bought. And his shop caught on fire years ago, burned. And then he ended up picking up a compound shortly after that. He's got some miscellaneous bear bows that he's, you know, garage sale finds. Damon Howitt, he's hunted with before. And then when we started going, you know, out of state to some of these Midwest states, he was like, you know what, I want to extend my range a little bit. He actually did hunt with a recurve for a few years. But then it just kind of became like, hey, I'm getting one. So he bought a compound, shot a deer or two with it. And now he's like really, he hasn't really bow hunted very much the last few years. And it's kind of like, I think it's because he's using a compound, not a trad bow. I think like he's a trad bow hunter. Like that's just, he's done that for so long. That's like his passion is in that way. So he's been looking. And then at ATA, I shot the new Bear Takedown bow. I can't think of the model anymore. They have a couple different risers, different limbs for him, and man, dude, that bow was shot so nice. So he really wants to shoot one of those. He's got a couple other ones in mind, and then I'm looking for like a 40-pound recurve of some sort, like either a takedown or a one piece something. Like my 50, I think my bow sitting behind me is like 52 pounds at 28, and I pull 30, so it's like it's too much. It's just too much. I bought it when I was like 20 and felt like Superman, you know.
Yeah, I'm not Superman that's anymore. Yeah, because I got a Satori. That's basically at my draw length. I shot short draw length at 27. I'm shooting 38 pounds. Then my longbow is a, you know, about 38 pounds too. It's a 40 pound at 28 longbow.
Yeah.
Dude, that it's awesome. It
doesn't hurt. That's right where I want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
I think it's like, and from the research I've done, like with arrow builds and like all that mm-hmm. stuff, I think if you're in that range, I can easily have like really good flying arrows. I'm not trying to like be a speed demon, not trying to do that. I want a forgiving bow, quiet bow, all those things, and just, you know, zap stuff at 15 yards and I'll be happy.
I went down that rabbit hole of building arrows for these this last past summer. Oh my god, briar shaft tuning, different weights, front of weight forward. I finally got a sweet setup out of each bow, but man, that was a rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, did you it keeps you busy.
Oh, buddy, does it, you know, cutting a quarter inch off a shaft at a time to get the bear shaft to fly straight, dude. But I tell you what, though, I've never had my bows shoot as good as they ever have.
Nice. Could you, yeah, that was one of the questions I asked you when you're talking about it. Like, was there a big difference? In your shots?
Yeah, when I first got the Satori, it came with the Hoyt limbs. I didn't think nothing of it. I just threw some old day six arrows on there that I had from my compound. I'm like, oh, these would be good enough. Then I hunted with it. I shot a deer that year with it, didn't think nothing of it. But then, like, as I progressed, then last summer, I'm like, I really paid attention to that, and I stripped some feathers off the shaft and shot it once, and it was way too stiff. Mm-hmm. And I just started buying shaft here, shaft there. And, you know, it's once you get it going, your arrows fly way better. It's crazy. I didn't believe nothing of it. That's just a trad bow, right? Then I went down the heavy arrow path, and dude, I'm almost shooting like 600 grain arrows. Dude, it's like
nice. A freak.
Yeah. And I'm probably going to back it off a little bit this year, but once I got it tuned, I'm like, if I hit where I don't want to, it's still going to get them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're going to get that penetration.
Yeah,
I'm kind of looking forward to that because, like, the bow I have now, I bought it from a local guy that they were going out of business. Anyone who's local to Grand Rapids area probably knows Black Dog Outfitters. The gentleman that was working there at the time had a traditional bow shop up in Sand Lake, Michigan. So he came down here, was pretty close to me. I mean, like, less than 20 minutes away from my house. And so I was pretty fortunate. Like, you know, like, I went there, place is going under, and I'd shot this bow quite a bit, and it's a Predator takedown bow.
Mm-hmm.
It was used bow, and I'd shot it a handful of times. It was just out of my price range. Well, I end up driving by, and they're like, hey, and we're closing shop, and everything's super discounted, and that bow is still there. So I was excited, like okay, it's my sign, I'm buying it. So I bought it, and he just set up arrows for me. And I just, you know, he knew what was, I didn't know anything about it. And now that I might have lost a couple of those arrows since then, and, you know, don't quite have as many. So I'm really excited to get a different bow and kind of go down that journey of finding the right arrow and knowing what I like. Back then I had no idea about arrows. Now I've learned so much with my compounds and, you know, listen to guys like talk on podcasts about it and watch all these cool videos on Facebook of guys going through it. I feel like I could probably get a bow set up that shoots a lot better than like the bow I have currently right now. And just be more like consistent with it. That's my thing. Like there's days I could pick that bow up and man, I am just on fire. I can throw a golf ball anywhere in the yard. I'm hitting it kind of like, you know, a day, but then there'll just be a lot of those streaks where I'm just like way off. And I know it's because my form breaks down because it's too much. It's just too much bow for me. Even when I do like the slowly work into it kind of a thing. So I think I'm excited to do that. I don't know how much I'm going to hunt with a recurve this upcoming fall. I still plan on taking it out a couple times like I did this year. A lot of fun, but I think I'm kind of excited to go to the expo in Kalamazoo and just shoot a wide variety of bows and maybe come home with something, maybe get a show deal, maybe get a used bow. I don't really know what it's going to look like, but I'm almost more excited to like find a different trad bow than I would be if I was like, hey, I'm going to buy a new compound this year. Cause like my compound's great. Like I don't need to do it. Now it's like, oh, I need something. And yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah. That's when I went back to trad. Cause I say I grew up shooting trad and then I went back. I'm like, I got three trad bows hanging up, but I still got my compound. Some days I feel like I should pick it back up when them deer are walking by 25 yards, but I'm like, nope. Because I actually took my compound in during the middle of the season and dropped it off at bow shop to tell them to put a new string on it so I wouldn't even have it to have access to it.
I had to get rid of the temptation.
That's right. That's what I did. Yeah. Nice. I'm like, nope, I'll pick that up. And then I happened to shoot that nice buck with that, you know, at 8 yards. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I didn't have my compound. Yeah. Or else I would have been hunting it with it that day.
Yep. You stuck through it. I think that's kind of like where you got to be too with that. That's always the... Like, I was kind of cheating the system a little bit. Like, I would go hunt somewhere where I felt like I was looking to have an opportunity to doe, or I didn't really have any, like, target deer there. So it's kind of like, hey, doe hunting now. Or it was, like, a spot I knew really well. Like, if I'm going to see a deer in bow range, it's going to be, like, 20 yards or in. Just, from, like, you know, doing that. And it was kind of fun to do that. But then I also did a couple hanging hunts, and I did a hanging hunt in a spot this year that I have never hunted before. But I just kind of, like, hunted a morning and didn't really see what I wanted to see. Did a little walkabout and found this like little transition between like a bunch of stuff kind of met, and the sign was there. There was an active scrape, and I was like, man, that would work on this kind of a wind in the morning. And then like 2 days later, that happened to be there. That was like the conditions, you know. Did a hanging hunt and had that great buck come by, and you know, I just didn't quite seal the deal on him. But it was really fun. Like I would not have had that encounter this year if I didn't pick the trad bow up. Like I would never even thought of hunting there if I wasn't like, you know, focused on that. So it just adds another element to it. And I don't know if I'll be like my dad always gives me a hard time. You just need to get rid, you know, he does all the training wheels are for cars, you know, he does all that stuff to me. But I enjoy the archery, you know, the archery chase in general. Like just archery in general is very I don't want to say like got me through like some tough times, but there was like a point in my life where I feel like all I did was work. Like I was just working. Mm-hmm. I was working a lot, trying to make ends meet, you know, maybe paying off some medical stuff from when Henry was born and trying to save up money for a house and, you know, paying off school debt, like all those things I think all of us go through. And the one thing that I could do was when I got home from work, if I had a little bit of daylight left, was I could go fling some arrows at a target, you know, out back. And so I think it's always been something I've done as even a young kid. Like there's pictures of me with, you know, 4 years old, no shirt on, just launching arrows at cereal boxes and stuff. So the whole game of archery is something that's I just get a freaking kick out of it, man.
Oh, I agree, because you know my kids take archery classes, so when they're in class, I'm shooting with them. But my goal was this year to shoot every day. So far, I've met it, but I probably won't the next couple days.
Yeah, it's just a little chilly.
Damn cold. But you know, if his class doesn't get shot canceled tomorrow night, we'll be shooting in that. Then I've got a trad league that I shoot in on Wednesday nights. Sweet. So yeah, I get but you're right, archery is just going to shoot is just like it's like you're released it, your time where you can focus on just that and nothing else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask you this because you're, you know, a shop teacher and you like doing those kind of things. Are you going to build your own recurve or longbow, or have you?
No, I have not. I have looked at it at the kits that you can buy, and I was just like, man, I ain't got time for that. I'll let somebody else build that for me. I'll pay for that. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, you know, I do construction and you think, oh man, you'd love to do it. No, I don't got the patience for that.
Right.
I just give me one that you know how to make them. You figured out how to make them really good. I'll just, you know, I'll reap that reward of your success.
Yeah. Yeah. If I was a wood shop teacher and had access to all that, I probably would, but not with my world of cars, man. No.
Yeah. So came into my head with vehicles and stuff. And like, you know, I was on the podcast with Dan Johnson a few weeks ago, and we were talking about college and all that stuff. And, you know, I don't have a degree, but I could get a degree pretty quick. Well, at least I could have. We kind of talked back and forth on, seems like when I was in school, you're pushing college, blah, back and forth.
Yep. They were.
How is that kind of going for kids? Cause I mean, this podcast has kind of like been revolved around hunting and, you know, getting our kids involved. You being in the automotive stuff and having kids go through that, what's kind of your like experience of that kind of thing? Because I personally know, like, I've been fortunate enough to have some newer vehicles the last couple of years, and oh my goodness, is there a lot that's going on with those things, from technology, from service, from all that. And I feel like that's definitely a field that, I mean, you're always going to need guys that can work on vehicles. And I know some people that have maybe a day job and then they hustle on the weekends. And I think it's just a really good skill set to have. And I mean, I've personally saved myself a bunch of money just doing some things, but now it's getting to the point where it's like, man, I kind of wish I knew how to do this. Like, I don't even know how to handle some of this technology.
Yeah. The cars nowadays is it's crazy. Even when I started working on cars full time in 2002, just to what a car is now is like, it's a completely different world, you know? What, you know, at the high school level that I teach, because I have a shop at a high school level, I teach kids the basics of the basics. You know, I got 60 kids a year. You know, I'll say 85% of them want to be there, want to learn it. So they'll learn something out of it. But like you say, I'll use my group last year. I had 30 seniors, 10 of them went into it to continue on. The sets are about cars is, nowadays is you got to go some kind of further education or training because they're getting so computer advanced. It's not the mechanical parts are still there, but they got to pursue something. They can't, it's hard to get that on the job training. You got to know what you're doing.
Yeah. And now does going to like doing shop with you or at school, is that give kids kind of like an opportunity to say, hey, I like this. And then the kids that do end up going forward, do they seem to like, because that's the thing, like, I'm always thinking about, like, what is my kid going to do? And I did not do skills. I did not do shop class. I did not do all those things. So I was, like, I felt like I had the pressure of, you need to take the AP classes. You need to, you know, challenge yourself so you get college credits while you're in school. And I feel like now as I'm, you know, in my mid-30s, like, man, I probably would have really benefited from, like, going to a skills and, like, could have like maybe potentially not waste my time is like the wrong term, but I spent a lot of money in college and to be in a medical field and I have no business doing that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It helps the kids that want to pursue it or even the ones that think they want to, but then they get into it and realize they don't want to do it. It lets them know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. And you know, even I'll let them know and be like, hey, I know you want to do this, but maybe you'd be a better welder because if you take welding classes or you don't like computers, well, cars are not for you anymore. If you can't program a car, you can't work on them anymore. Yes, you can do brakes on the weekend for your buddies and make some side cash, but it's so techno advanced in what just the tooling that you use, you know,
truck will go into limp mode and I'm like, what's going on? Nothing's it's perfectly fine. Driving down the road, you know, been driving it all year. I mean, I put crazy miles on 40, 50,000 miles a year and all of a sudden, boom, limp mode. It's like, what the frick's going on? Try to self-diagnose. Can't. Like you cannot until you bring it to a dealer and have them plug it in. And I bought like a separate little OBD2 scanner or whatever that hooks my phone, which has been like really, really nice to have. I should have had one a long time ago. But just to deal with that, like, the world's changing. Right. And I think there's still going to be need and desire, but, I almost miss the days. My old beater trucks that I drove was like crank start. Oh man, what's wrong? Oh, it's probably the starter going through and just whap, hit the starter a couple times. Room, you know, hey, we're good. Those days are behind us.
it's getting crazy. It's just like even just doing some of the basic maintenance of a vehicle, resetting the computer, all the tire pressure sensors. It's like, damn, what do you do?
And then here you go. You just want to be back like the, you know, the 80s vehicles, shooting trabos, keeping life as simple as can be.
I don't know. I don't want those 80s vehicles, all the emissions that those guys messed up. Oh, I can't stand that.
Oh, true. That was, the spider fuel injection or whatever they had back then. Terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, so I want, like, another thing I kind of want to talk about, I know you're big into waterfowl hunting. You do that with your family as well, right? You're talking about how your kid does that.
And yeah, my son and I do. Yeah,
son do that. Now, you also do you build your own decoys, or do you just refurbish old decoys, or what's kind of? I see some behind you.
I make my own.
You make your own. Okay, so it's kind of like the process of that. Like, is that something that you've always done? Something you started doing later in life? Like, what got you into like I'm making my own decoys?
I've always kind of picked up some old plastic ones and repainted them because I couldn't afford the new ones. Then I started when my son was born to keep me around the house because I couldn't do trips and stuff. I started carving decoys during the wintertime. Then Then I started teaching, so I had to have something to do during the summer if I didn't pick up a summer job. So then I just kind of turned that into a hobby, and I build and sell decoys now, and I make enough to fund my duck hunt hobby, you know, nice. And, you know, my hunting trips and gas money and buying my kids shotguns and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's something that just kind of burst out of. So it's kind of funny because, like,
yep.
I changed a lot of stuff in my life when I had a kid, and it wasn't – a lot of people can use it as an excuse, like, oh, I can't do as much stuff as I wanted to, or I still think I do just as much as I would like. I just had to change that yep. passion or change that direction. I think a lot of dads can go through that where it's like, hey, there's that guilt and you want to be there for your kid or however you end up wanting to do things. But hearing you talk about like a whole new hobby was born, you know, out of that is pretty cool. And then you can, I mean, heck, gun money, like, let's go.
I know, like I say I make foamers decoys, because some of them are foam, some of them are cork, you know, all depends on what I want to make at what time or whatever I can get access to. But yeah, and plus if I shoot them up they're mine.
If the kiddo gets a little excited and dust, yeah. you know, shoots one yeah. over, who cares?
He started 2 years ago. He's made a few of them for me, and he enters them into the local youth fair, and he gets freaking reserve champions and crap out of that. And I was like, dude, you should stay. Why don't you help me, and we can make a business out of this, and we can buy all each other a new gun every year.
That'd be, yeah, dude, that's cool. So now you talk about trips, like, what part do you go out of state to waterfowl hunt still, or do you kind of stick to Michigan? No, because you know, I know you have weekends, but you don't, it's not like you can take like a week long off, you know,
trip. I have not left Michigan at a waterfowl hunt in many, many years. I used to go out to North Dakota before when I was still working at the dealership, you know, it was no problem to get time off then. But most of mine is local. I hunt big water, small water. You know, I can hunt Lake Michigan. I got equipment. I got two duck boats, two duck dogs. About more decoys than you can imagine. But you know, in even where we're at on the west side, it's not a high waterfowl area. We got geese, but I'm more of a duck hunter than a goose hunter. But, you know, I would love to be able to go somewhere. But me and my son, we were looking at it. He's getting old enough now, we might do a, like, Christmas break, January season down south somewhere or out west. But now we might, you know, do that. Then we're going to start traveling up north for the each opening day. You know how we have the different zones?
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to go up to the UPO for opening day this year. Then, you know, I got a family member who's got a cabin up in the Cadillac, Wellston area. I used to go duck hunting at. So he wants to do weekend trips. So we'll do weekend trips. Yeah.
Nice. Now, so duck hunting and waterfowl hunting is something I just did, like goose hunting, remember, because couldn't deer hunt. And it seemed like when, you know, all the dairy fields, like, you know, my grandpa being a dairy farmer, like, we'd go up to that, like, whatever zone that is, zone two would be where that yep. would be. It seemed like when I was younger, there was just geese everywhere. Like, my uncles and dad would just shoot geese, like, every time. And then, you know, now, the last few years, it feels like there's not as many geese around, or I just don't know how to hunt them. Like, it used to be like, hey, find an oat field, find a, you know, the first little bit of chopped corn and you go have fun. And now it's like, man, I got everywhere I drive is, you know, chopped corn or, you know, cut corn or whatever it is. And there just doesn't seem to be as many geese flying around. And then duck hunting too is like so sporadic. Like I swear, like, you know, one pond will be just low with them 1 year and then you won't see them there for 5 years, you know? So what kind of, like, let's kind of talk about ducks, because that's the one thing I really enjoy duck hunting when I've done it, and I kind of want to get into it a little more. What kind of things are you guys looking for? Like, obviously, I'm really close to the Grand River, so I've hunted that before. That gets a little crazy because a lot of people do that. But is there any, like, kind of, like, not necessarily any of your secrets, but are you, like, able to, like, digitally scout spots you duck hunt, or is this kind of got to be, like, hey, we have to go walking around to find these spots? Are you knocking on door permission for duck hunting? What's kind of your recipe to find, like, spots to target ducks?
Just from growing up and, you know, the state land, we hunt a lot of public land, so it gets nuts at times. I'll digital scout it sometimes if it's a new place, because I'm trying to find a new spots for them, because, you know, he wants to shoot more. I'm like, dude, we got to find more spots. We got to spend less time hunting and more time scouting. Mm. You know, and that's how what drug me to hunting the big water, because not as many people hunt out there, but it's very weather dependent. So I got a setup to do that. Then I when I was 22, 23, where I lived, I could hunt just about any farm field around, but those days are done. Mm-hmm. I got one field left of a dozen that I used to hunt, and I think that's just got sold. So it's like, man, I ain't got nothing anymore. So now we're just strictly water. You know, public land and water is hard in Michigan because we got some weird rules about landowners and riparian rights. And it's like, oh my God.
So, yeah, it's intimidating. Like for someone like me who does it, I never had anyone to show me how to do, you know, duck hunting that way. I'm like, I don't know if I want to mess with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pain in the butt. If it's not public land, I just to this point anymore, I don't even mess with it. I just e-scout and find all the, we got, the Ottawa Marsh and the Todd Farm and all those up in Allegan and stuff like that. Places to go. There's places to go. It's just like, you got to be there when the birds are there, or a year that it's not a drought like it was this year.
Yeah. No joke.
Up all our water.
Let me tell you what, when I went every time, I've been to North Dakota twice and now I've been to South Dakota, and I wish we had waterfowl like they have out there. Oh my gosh, man. It is off the chain.
I used to go to Devil's Lake before it got popular. Man, the birds you would see come down that you would never even think to call to out here. You would hit them with a call and they would drop from Mach 2 from 9,000 feet and be in your decoys. It's like, dang.
Oh.
Then, I would shoot more birds in 1 week out there than I'd probably shot in 10 years here.
Yeah.
You know, but once again, I got too many hobbies, so I don't strictly just do duck hunt. If I scouted and just did one thing, I would probably shoot more birds. But you know what? It's not about shooting the birds anymore. It's about my kids and dogs.
Dude, I love that you just brought that up, because that is the spot I've been the last couple of years. Like, okay, I went through a stretch where I was like, I need to shoot a 3.5-year-old buck in Michigan. Like, I want to. So for 5 years, I went just crazy on it. Didn't goose hunt, didn't rabbit hunt. All I did was chase whitetails. Like, I scouted in the summer, I scouted in the spring. I just tried to do things. You know, I was learning how to mobile hunt. I mean, just really went hard at it. And found some really good success. Like, the reason I had the success I had was because of that dedication I had. But then I started, like, I really missed running dogs with my beagles. I really missed, hanging out with buddies. I really missed, catching bluegills with a fly rod or those kind of things. That was kind of the same time my son was getting older. And, man, I, like you just said, I love doing multiple things a year. I love being able to, like, now it's time to focus on the whitetails for, this stretch of time. Now it's time to focus on rabbits. Now it's time to, try to kill turkey and just doing those things. And, like, maybe I could be a better whitetail hunter if that's all I did. But I like enjoying all our things. And living in Michigan, man, like, we do, we don't have necessarily the craziest amount of waterfowl opportunities, but we do have opportunities at deer, turkey, small game, waterfowl, like, all that stuff, and great fishing. I'm taking advantage of that.
Yeah, it's just like some years I always duck hunt, then I always bow hunt, but then some years I go up north and chase partridge and woodcock. Then some years, we'll get into some other, squirrel hunting or whatever, but there's too much to do to be limited to just deer hunting or duck hunting. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, I deer hunted less this year and have found more success because my places rested and the deer didn't know I was hunting them versus hunting them every day.
I love that. Dude, I love sneaking into a spot and deer moving. It's like they have no idea. It's like, this is 3 hours before dark and I got deer walking around. I freaking love that. Like, you just know that you're not back in the day when you're not the same tree just over and over and over again trying to kill something on volume. But those days are behind us. Behind me, thankfully. Learned a lot with that. So going into this year, I mean – there's February. Can you duck hunt in February? Or is it only goose hunt in February?
It's just the goose season, late goose season.
So have you done that at all?
Oh, it went back when we used to get the whole month of January. I used to do it a lot. Now it's so broke up. I get like a weekend. I'm like, or 2 weekends. I'm like, man, I don't really know if I want to dig my stuff out for it, but it can be phenomenal hunting. I love hunting geese in the snow. Just all depends. If they're there, if they're around, I'll hunt. but I'm not going to drive 3 hours to scout for them.
Yeah. So last year I messed up. I knew there was a late season for geese, but didn't like really pay that close attention to it. We had kind of a mild winter, right?
Right.
Oh my gosh, dude, these geese were just piling into this field. And of course I found out when I was driving by and watching the geese fall out of the sky, because other guys got permission on the same area that I could hunt. And I was like, this year, I'm like, oh dude, like, hey, like buddies, like we got permission there. Like we need to do this. And now it's been like 4 degrees outside and a bunch of snow, and the couple fields that were like clear, the farmers have spread a bunch of, you know, cow crap on. So I'm like, oh man, last year would have been the year. I don't know what will happen this year now, but at least some of the stuff close to me, it's like, ooh, I don't know. But yeah, that the guy that went in that area, like there were so many geese, and he just they cleaned house hunt.
Those late season geese can be so easy or so fickle. They can change fields like on a dime and not come in, or you're going to sit out there all day, then they won't show up, and the next day they'll fly at 9 o'clock. They are so finicky, too. And it, or if it's clear and sunny, they're not going to fly, but if it's a blizzard, they'll be on you all day.
There's so much to that game that I don't know yet, but I want to know. Like, I want to know, but I also understand, like, hey, I have some old school decoys that were hand-me-downs. I got a Menards layout blind that we all bought. So it's kind of like, if we get a shot opportunity here, we're doing good. So it's kind of fun to be like that big of a noob. Like if you and your buddies are so like terrible at it that you can find these small victories very easy, you know? So I kind of like that place like that we're at, like we show up, it's like, hey, let's put them out like this time, or let's try it like this. And then they come in, it's like, oh dang, the sun was, you know, shining wrong, wind's coming this way, but hey, we got some shots off, you know? So I like being there, but there's going to come a point in time where it's like, I kind of should probably get a little better at this. But, you know, it's still that juggling, you know, how much time do I have to scout and I'm coaching, or, you know, how bad does Henry want to go? If he like, it's kind of like, I feel like some of those things are going to really start to go with the flow of what my kid wants. Like if he's dad, like your kid, like, I want to go travel duck hunt. You're probably like, yeah, let's do it. Like we're doing it. Like, let's do this. So I'm going to kind of leave it up to him, you know, to some of those things.
That's how we were this year, because last year he called it his practice duck season, and this year was for real. So it's like, I don't think I hunted a morning deer hunting until mid-November, because it's like every weekend we were duck hunting. And that's what he wanted to do both days. I'm like, okay, like I'm not going to say no. You know, I got too much money and dogs and time and everything else not to go duck hunting. And for guys, you know. Like I say, he shot birds this year, so good for him, you know, but his highlight's always cooking breakfast in the boat or taking his dog, because the younger dog is his dog.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. You know, I remember it was Thanksgiving weekend. He's getting grown up into it. I'm in the back of the boat cooking, and he won't even say anything when birds are coming. He's just letting them cut loose. I'm like, dude, you could have told me. Maybe got a shot instead of cooking your breakfast.
Doing this for
you're good, you just cook. Whatever, man.
Thanks, dad, you know, take those eggs right now, hurry up. I love it. Well, hey, I mean, talking to you about this stuff is just I love talking to guys that have kids a little older, especially because you're raising your son differently than like what we got raised, right? Like with the ability to hunt at younger ages. And, you know, in a time when technology is such a driving force, like it's so easy for my son to, you know, turn on the Xbox or, you know, watch some video or, you know, do those. There's so many distractions, and you're trying to, I mean, dude, I don't think I got a PlayStation until I was like 12 or 13 years old. So completely different time frame. So it's fun to talk to guys that are doing the same thing. And man, when I'm coaching these kids and seeing my son, like, he's bringing pictures of a deer he shot to school, and he's like, yeah, some kids didn't really like that, but other kids really like it because they've never seen that before. So it's like, man, dude, when I was in school, everyone hunted, like it felt like, you know. So it's definitely a different time. I think it's encouraging to hear that you got a kid that's just tore up with it. You know, I love talking to people who are like, you know, 10 years younger than me that are, you know, crazy about whitetails and knowing that we can raise kids to do the same thing, because ultimately that's what's going to keep this party going, you know, generation after generation, is just bringing people up into it. If that's adults or your own kids or maybe a nephew or a friend's kid, that's how you can create little monsters in the hunting world and just keep passing the stuff on. So is there anything like that kind of comes to mind, maybe, that you can maybe encourage anyone to, like, the thing that comes to my mind with my son, like sacrifice, which I think any dad or any parent probably understands that term, but there is a point in time where it was like, hey, I am going to maybe give up like a pristine day, or you know, you think, oh my gosh, today's the day, like I'm going to kill something. It's like, oh, I'm going to take my kid with me and we're just going to walk around and, you know, sit on a field edge, you know, instead of like hunting a tree stand. Like, those are the moments in my life when I started doing that stuff. It kind of brought everything into perspective for me. So sacrifice, man, my word. I don't know if there's anything else that maybe comes up to you that you can probably encourage people.
I want to touch on one thing that you said, just because, you know, like you were talking about kids and stuff, being a high school teacher, and I'm a pretty rural district that I teach in, just the number of kids that don't hunt anymore versus when we were in school. It's like, dude, so anytime a student of mine wants to hunt, we will talk hunting, and I will try to, you know, not persuade them, maybe like, hey, don't worry about if you don't shoot the biggest deer, just shoot a deer. You're 14 years old, who cares? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's my biggest beef on the deer hunting industry. It's like, these kids are 13, 14, you know, freshmen, sophomores in high school, they got their target deer. I'm like, come on, dude, how many deer you shot in your life? Two. I'm like, then forget that word target deer and just shoot whatever you want to shoot, you know. So mm-hmm. I see that, I'm like, then I try to raise my kid and, dude, it's not about what you shoot, it's just go out, have fun. You know, there was definitely times this year I sacrificed time in a tree stand because he wanted to go pheasant. Oh, we did the pheasant release. It was the second week of November, like November 10th or something like that. On the way to where we're going pheasant hunt, I seen 5 bucks running nose. I'm like, dude, we should be in the deer woods right now, but we're like, nope, we're going pheasant hunting. And I shot 2 pheasants that day and he missed 2 pheasants that day. So it's like, okay, it was worth it.
You know, 100%.
You know, so you got to give and take, because I coach too. It's like, what are we going to do? Then, you know, some days I'll take, you know, like, dude, you got to stay home. I'm taking your sister and we'll go sit out in the tree stand for 10 minutes. Then she gets bored. So give and take.
I love it.
Just try not to pressure them into doing it. He wants it. I'm like, dude, you sure you want to get up to go tomorrow? Yep. Or, you know, every time I wake him up in the morning, you sure you want to go? Yep. I mean, okay. You know, then I'll give like, hey, let's go. You got to get your butt moving. Let's go. It's just, you can't pressure him into it. Cause that was my biggest fear, was pressuring him into it. Cause like I say, he, my son and daughter both took to it really well. Turkey hunting. He shot his first turkey at 5 on video. Nice. So yeah, he's pretty ate up with turkey hunting and duck hunting. Bow hunting, he hasn't got the itch yet. He does, but he wants to shoot it with his bow, his long bow. He doesn't want to shoot a crossbow. I got him one for him. He doesn't want to shoot it with a gun. He's got a gun. He's like, I want to shoot a deer with my bow. Mm. Like, probably because that's all I hunt with. I hunt during gun season with my bow. You know, I got it. I shot a doe during that late doe with my muzzleloader just because I wanted some snack sticks, you know, and he wanted to make them. So I'm like, okay, dude, I'll go shoot a doe. And he didn't want to go out because it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's hard not to want to pressure them into it, but I kind of push them a little bit. Then I back off and see how they react, you know, because God knows we need more kids into this stuff. Because, there's not as many as there used to be. I asked him at school, I'm like, hey, any of your buddies hunt? He's got a couple that do, but, you know, he's in fourth grade. I'm like, man, this does not look good for the future if we don't get something right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coaching soccer this year, we only had 10 kids in our team. Yeah, I think it was the spring session was one age group, and then I did a different age group for fall session. And, you know, Henry and 2 other kids were like hunting, and that was like youth season was going on there. And I know the 2 kids that also youth, they like were so excited to talk to me about hunting, and like the dads were too, you know. And because they just didn't have anyone, you know, there was no one else I could talk to, really. Like, I kind of get that sense. They're like, oh my gosh, you like to hunt too? Like, yeah. And like, the practice would get done, they'd run over to their dad or their mom and grab the phone, show me all the pictures of maybe the deer they shot, or you know, what deer they're going to try to shoot, you know, be that a 6-point a spike or a 10-point, whatever it was. And I was just like, dude, I love that. And so I know there are still, you know, parents and people doing like similar to us that's going on, but there is, I feel like I do have to make a better effort at, if any kid comes to me, like, granted, I can't take every kid, right? I have my kid that has to go first. But if there's a season, like, I got some people in mind, like, if maybe Henry finds success right away and I'm on to some stuff, like, I got people I can reach out to. And that goes for adults too. Like, you can, you know, I got a guy that's, he's in his early 20s. He's never hunted before. We've talked about hunting, and I invited him to go rabbit hunt with me. And he's like, dude, I've never hunted before. That sounds like a blast. Like, yeah. He's, you know, and there, it's crazy to me that how many people probably are at that same exact point where they have that, you know, they're not against it by any means, but they just don't have anyone in their circle to take them. Same with my wife's cousin. You know, she's 12 years old. She just, her parents don't hunt. They didn't grow up a hunting community. They're not against hunting, but they don't hunt. And she's like, I want it. She was seeing turkeys in her backyard, and she's like, can you take me turkey hunting? And I was like, yeah, I'll take you over, you know, down the road at a piece I got. And she went, and dude, she's like, she loves it, you know. And then hopefully this coming fall, you know, get her on a deer. She can hopefully shoot a deer during maybe the youth season or something like that, just kind of be on the A game a little more. I mean, there's just so many, you know, I can't take everyone. You can't take everyone there. But I mean, if it's just that one person, or I guess I'm just always going to encourage that. And hearing you talk about your kids and seeing that stuff in the school setting, right? Like, you see a lot of kids every year. It's like, okay, yeah, there's more we can do. We got to keep the effort up and just attempt it. And you know, you're doing a level where your kids, like, I cannot wait for the day my kids like, yeah, dad, make breakfast. I'm like, you know, here I am shooting these ducks. Like, dude, as a dad, yeah, that kind of sucks a little bit, but still, it's like, I'm doing something right.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah, you know, or like, I'll see him coming, like, and I won't say anything. I'll let him pick him up, let him call the shots, let him, you know, make him feel like he's doing it, and which sometimes he is. I'm like, dude, I'll be dicking around on my phone and be like, hey, put it away. I'm like, yep, I was just seeing what your mom wanted, dude. Yeah. Relax.
Yep, mom got a hold of
yeah, she wants to know what time we're home. Like, dude, I don't know. We're hunting.
Yep, we're doing this. That's cool, man. Well, I think, let's see, I'm going to pull my phone out here so I can see what the game's doing.
I probably didn't want to know.
Notre Dame's. Oh, it's not looking so good. 21-7 in the third quarter. That's come on, Notre Dame. Of. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, geez. That Ohio team, man.
Well, they just, you know, Michigan kicked them in the butt and, you know, kicked them into gear. So the reason they played so good is because Michigan gave a wake up call. That'll be my thing this year. But yeah.
Yeah.
Ohio State. Ugh. The only thing they got going for him is they got big bucks over there, but that's about it.
yeah, exactly. And they got okay walleye fishing too.
Yeah, true that. Well, let's end this podcast. First, I want to know what bow you, if you were to go grab your bow to hunt, what bow is the bow to shoot this year? And then break down maybe your favorite shotgun that you like to use too.
If I'm going to pick a bow that I have currently, it's going to be my Hoyt Satori.
What limbs do you have on that?
I actually got the Nika 3 limbs.
Okay.
Those are carbon foam, but smooth, fast for what it is. That's the bow that I'm going to pick. I want to look at a stalker stick bow.
Yep, dude, I'm shooting. That's,
dude, he is.
That's one of the bows I want to shoot.
Phenomenal. I look at him every year. I'm like, I'm going to pick one up and shoot him this weekend because he makes an ILF riser too. And I like that ILF game. But yeah, that's my bow. I got a long bow.
What size riser do you shoot that Satori? The bigger one or
mine's
the
17?
Is that the short one or the
short
one? Yep.
Okay. Yeah, they got a 17, 19, and a 21. I got the 17. I like a shorter bow for hunting out of a tree stand, especially the mobile setups that I do. And then,
are you a split finger, 3-under, gap shoot?
I split. Split true instinctual. Yep. I can't gap shoot. I can't do that point game. I didn't even know what that stuff was when I started shooting. And they're talking to me at the trad league. I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? Yeah. I just pull it back and shoot it.
Yep. That's how I've always shot too. Like my dad, like your kid, you know, like when I was little, he's, I don't think I got a compound until I was 11, I think maybe.
Yeah.
Almost 11, maybe like that. That I turned, you know, my birthday's in May. So I want to say like that year I turned 11 is when I got a compound, but he made me shoot instinctive with, you know, the old bear bow, then whatever other bow he had until then. And then he, dude, he made me shoot a compound with fingers and like no peep sight, just like one pin. Like
that's how I started.
That's how he made me shoot. So like for me to like, when I grab a longbow or a recurve, I can't, like I have to split finger, bury the flex in my cheek. Like that's just how I shoot them.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. So then what broadheads do you like to use? Have you kind of,
I actually shoot the old Magnus, two blades or the Zwicky.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. They're, I'm like, dude, I've thought about all these new blades and stuff. I'm like, dude, but these deer, when I shoot them, I watch them fall. I'm like, dude, I ain't changing that.
Yeah.
I'm not changing that. It works good. Then, so I shoot an old Benelli Super Black Eagle.
Not like the original. Nice.
Yeah. I bought that. What's that?
Does it have a long barrel on it and stuff? You have like the waterfall version, or
it's, well, I guess it's probably not the original. It's like the second generation, but still not the SP2.
Okay.
It's. I think I bought that my first year out of college. I saved up in like 2002, first full time gig. I'm like, I'm buying that gun. Nice. I've shot that gun ever since. I don't even pick up any other shotgun that I'm duck hunting with. It's a 12 gauge, but I'm thinking about getting into the 20 gauge with it, getting one. Like, dude, I don't know. I wish I'd have bought 5 of them shotguns at that time for what I paid for it now. Further now.
So I bought the first semi-automatic shotgun I bought, and the only one other than my 410 that I have now, I bought a Super Black Eagle 2 in 2016 or 17. Right before it had, I can't remember why, it was on sale. I was like super like ecstatic that I bought it. And told the wife, I was like, man, I got a good deal on the shotgun. It was, you know, a certain percentage off. I think I paid $1,100 for it brand new. So, I mean, it was like an $1,800 shotgun at the time. And I sent a picture to her, and she's like, you bought a Benelli Super Black Eagle 2. And I'm like, the pains of having a wife that knows stuff about hunting, man. She's like, I don't care how good of a deal you got on that thing. It's still a lot expensive. But, hey, it's been a great gun. Like, I've done everything. I've, you know, pheasant hunt in North Dakota with it, duck hunt, you know, don't do a lot of stuff like some guys do, but I mean, it does everything I've needed to do, you know, throw shells in and think shoots every time. So I love that gun, but yeah, that's, if I had to pick, keep one shotgun, that would be the shotgun I keep for sure.
I bought mine in Kalamazoo Gander Mountain that didn't even have anymore.
Yeah.
Nice. I got it on sale for like $850.
Yep.
They had a year-end sale right before, a special going on right before hunt season. I'm like, sold. I thought that was paying a lot then. It was like $1,000 gun retail, and I got it for like $850 on sale. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I wish I'd have bought 4 of them.
Yep. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yep, I know.
Oh, shoot. Well, hey, dude, I really enjoyed this episode. I'm really opportunistic that we can share a rabbit hunt here in the future with your kid.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that. I think that'll be, that'll be really fun. Like the dogs, you know, this weekend, I think it's supposed to warm up a little bit. And I got the trad shoot, you know, show. Yep. So I don't know if we'll have, but here in the next couple weeks, we'll definitely have to get you guys out.
And,
I'll make sure I watch him, because I'm probably going to have to be worried about him jumping on the rabbits before me. He sounds like a little killer. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see him go and do that with you guys, hopefully. And then once we do that, definitely have to do another episode talking about that. And maybe little man can get on and he can share his experiences too. So,
okay.
But yeah. Hey, let's go with Notre Dame. I mean, I got nothing else to say. Hopefully they can pull it through. They got, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter left.
That's right.
Miracle.
We'll see.
Yep. All right, dude. Well, hey, have fun. Maybe I'll run into you this weekend.
I'll let you know. I'll get a hold of you while we're there.
Sweet, dude. Thank you. Have a good night. And hey, everyone else, appreciate you guys listening. And you know what to do this week. Make sure you get out there. See ya.
Yep. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.